Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. I'm Rick Bucher. Whitlock and Wiley are off today. I'm joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington, longtime Cowboys cornerback Orlando Scandrick, and Super Bowl champ Will Blackman. Let's start with Tom Brady, sponsored by Popeye. Score a free three-piece tenders on your first app order. The GOAT's future is very much up in the air, with even more teams throwing their hat in the free agency ring this week. Reportedly, the Giants have now emerged as an option for Brady, and this morning, ESPN's Jeff Darlington reports that the QB believes he will play somewhere other than New England next season. LeVar, what's more likely? Brady ends up back in New England or somewhere else next year?
With all of the rhetoric that's out there and all of these rumors that are circulating around, the more I continue to hear about where Tom Brady will be other than New England, I just feel as though he's still going to end up in New England. I feel confident in saying, even though the Schefters and the Darlingtons and all of these guys hear about it, if he was going to be gone, I feel as though it is not a big story, Rick.
So why are people posing this? Why are people saying they expect that he's going to be someplace else? Why are we hearing that?
I think there's a lot of layers to this, and I think the most relevant layer to this is he can help another team, and these other teams can be helped by Tom Brady, and I don't go any real deeper than that.
I get it. Rick, I think, back with the Patriots, I think this is a classic game of hardball. Tom's been in the league 20 years. He's got a lot of friends in the media. Belichick's got a lot of people in his corner, a lot of people in the media. I think both teams are just playing hardball with each other, but I don't envision a situation where Tom leaves New England. Can he help some teams? Yes, but just the familiarity, just being at home, just the comfort, I think he stays.
So you're suggesting that it's the media that's putting it out there?
No, I'm not suggesting
for Tom's
the media.
Benefit.
I'm suggesting that both sides are playing hardball with each other. Both people have, it would be like me having a friend and saying, LeVar, this is what I'm thinking. And it'd be like you having Will as a friend and saying, Will, this is what I'm thinking. And you guys are both coming from different angles and reporting into the media and causing kind of like this chaos, which we call, or I call, hardball.
Right, because there's a lot of friends right now talking, giving their opinions, what they think. But I believe it's either the Patriots or he goes home and retires. And the only incentive, I think, for him to come back, there's two franchises with six Super Bowls, right? The Patriots and the Steelers. And he would try to get number seven.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's like, what's the point of going somewhere else for right. what? At that age, it's pointless. So it's either Patriots or go home.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of I still believe, in spite of all these reports, not to say that the reports are wrong, but this has to be coming from the agent. Hey, we're available, and letting teams know. Normally, I would hear more teams jumping in, and they're not talking to the Patriots. It's a done deal. He's going out. That's how I would read it as a reporter, right?
Absolutely. And I mean,
but the reality is, New England can't afford this, can they? This is not Joe Montana moving on to Kansas City because you got Steve Young right there.
Right.
Understood.
But moving on because they had a backup
plan. Succession
plan. Right.
So for me, it doesn't make any sense. And how much do you think that the CBA, I don't know if you guys have ever been in a situation where you were free agents.
I don't think the CBA has anything to do with this. I think they could. I think that, you know, teams don't lose players that they want to lose. If they really want to keep you, they'll figure it out. It's business. But it's like when you're buying that new car or those new pair of shoes, and they're like, oh, if you don't get it, you know, somebody else is interested. You know, that's kind of what how they're selling.
I just got a text for a new car that's out. My guy said, hey, I got this car in. You want to come get it?
Right.
It's here today. Might be going tomorrow. Yeah.
Jared Stidham. That's your backup.
Right.
All right. Your fourth round pick from 2019. This year, you're picking 23rd in the draft.
Yeah.
Nobody's really talking about who is going to succeed Tom Brady. I don't see and hear a posture that says we are definitively deciding to move on from Tom Brady. And so for me, as the conversation continues to wear on and you weigh out all of the positives that Tom Brady being with the New England Patriots brings to the table, what that could represent for at least one more season, unless you believe in a deep class full of quarterbacks that you're going to get a guy that either – falls the 23rd, or you can make a move to get a little bit higher and get one of those top four guys. What is your plan to move away? Is it Andy Dalton? Is it somebody else? And are they a better option than Tom Brady?
I think that, you know, there will be some people that will pose the kind of like question and say, you know, with Tom's age, is it better to get a stopgap like an Andy Dalton and then get somebody to learn under? But who better to learn under than Tom Brady, the GOAT himself?
Well, you also have the situation where the Boston Red Sox just let Mookie Betts go. Are you going to go back-to-back? And you saw the reaction in Boston. I mean, let's not mistake Boston for being just any old sports town. This is where they revere their heroes. So the idea that Mookie Betts is going to go, and you saw the fallout from that, and now you're going to let Tom Brady go someplace else without a succession plan.
It is an emotional town. When I was in school at BC, you know, the Red Sox won, city went crazy. Patriots were winning. Bruins were winning. Celtics were winning. When they were losing, you didn't want to go outside because people were miserable. So I don't think the Patriots will make decisions based off how the fans feel. I mean, I remember when they lost the regular season game, their last regular season game, I mean, they got booed at halftime. To the point where they're just emotional, so they're not going to make a decision based on what the fans feel. Once again, I just feel like he either stays or he's going to go home and retire.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit because, again, we had this conversation on the show yesterday, and I thought that there was some validity to this and Bruce Arians really wanting to come after Tom Brady and really try to get him to Tampa Bay and what that could mean for a team that has – the type of tools and weapons they have on the offensive side of the ball. I think looking at it from Tom Brady's side of it and not just from the team side of it, this is a great opportunity for Tom Brady if he goes to the right set of circumstances.
To do what, though?
Well, again, to continue to compete. And if you can go to a team where you can compete and have the opportunity to win and further solidify your greatness as a player – I think his will to compete is still there, and I think that that's why there's a very real chance that even if it is not New England, he takes his talent somewhere else to continue to prove that that talent level is still there. His willingness to win and ability to win is still there.
But respectfully, I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to agree to disagree. Six Super Bowls, 20 years, one franchise. I mean, just what's happening in sports world right now with Kobe Bryant passing away, spending his whole entire career with one franchise, I think Tom's way and looking at all of that. But I think at the same time, he wants to be valued. He wants to know that they want him. And there's been too much chatter about, you know, is he going to go? Is he going to stay? Right. Have they offered him? Have they not? Have they spoken?
Who's more valuable, Bill or Tom? Right.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that Harbaugh, they'll figure it out.
Well, there's also the question of why the Patriots are not saying anything to him at this point and how that's affecting his feelings. Let's move to another QB who could be changing things up, Baker Mayfield. After a disappointing sophomore season, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport says the Browns are putting a major focus on Baker's fitness, and the QB is planning to slim down and be faster this season after bulking up last year and losing some quickness. LeVar, how much difference would slimming down have on Baker's game next season?
The quarterback position is that's one of those positions where you can say you could have a bad body and still be a dope football player. Yeah, I don't necessarily look at it from the perspective of performance. it could make him better to lose a couple pounds, shed some off of his midsection so he has a little bit more strength with his core. But ultimately, what it comes back to for me is between the ears. If he's getting himself in more physical condition, then maybe there's a direct correlation to how his mind is developing with getting in better condition and better shape. Maybe that's the direction and that's the path you take. You create that focus to get your body right. It has some type of a clear effect and impact on your mind.
I agree. I think he's making an effort to get better, leaving no stone unturned. I mean, me personally, I went into every offseason saying, where can I get better? Is it my diet? Is it my sleep habits? Is it working out? And honestly, I feel like, you know, Baker has a lot of areas to get better. And, you know, I haven't been shy about saying that. And the fact that he's making an effort is he can go nowhere but up from here.
Yeah, no, I agree, because he's a gifted quarterback. I believe he has all the tools, and I said that on record, to do well. But it is between the ears. And I feel like for him, this is more of a psychological thing for him. Like, let me go in this offseason and get myself prepared in a different way. Let me go ahead and really train. Because I remember there's a kid I trained who was working out in L.A. last year, and Baker was there, and so was Deshaun Watson. And he came to me. He was like, Deshaun was putting that work in. Like, he was going at it, and Baker was there just hanging out, you know, not really doing much work. And he said, call me crazy, but I showed up this season, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like this year, Baker was humbled tremendously, and he kind of is like, okay, let me go ahead and put the work in. Not so, like you said, not because it's going to physically help him, but more so between the ears.
Yeah, so
what's up, Rick?
There's two parts to this. There's getting heavier, there's getting stronger, there's getting bigger, and then there's being out of shape. And this sounds to me like he was out of shape. I'm going to be more impressed if I hear that he's doing fewer commercials than he's eating fewer donuts.
Yeah, I agree with you.
To me, that's where is your focus? And the fitness thing, I mean, it raises even more questions. What does it say about last year and where he was from a conditioning standpoint?
You know, we're just now coming out of this Wilder Fury fight, and we looked at how the conditioning may or may not played a part in the outcome of that match. And when I look at Baker Mayfield and him coming out and this becoming a story, it says to me he's trying to give some type of a justification for why things may have went.
Justification or excuse.
Okay.
You can call it that.
I mean, let's call it what it is, right?
Some call it tomato, yeah. Some call it tomato.
Yeah. However we want to slice it up, I think knowing what we know about Baker Mayfield and the history of his career, this is one of those bounce back moments for him. I'm an underdog again. Mm-hmm. I've been on top, but now I'm finding myself in a familiar place that I've been before. It's almost like when Rocky went to go fight Drago, right, in his homeland. You got to go and you got to go out in that wilderness. And sometimes you got to take it from the glitz and the glamour of what it was when you were, sorry to say this, at Equinox, and you have the steam room and it smells real nice and the aroma is good. Sometimes you got to go into that basement. Sometimes you got to go back into that barn.
You got to go in the meat freezer.
Sometimes you got to go back into that meat packing area.
I like Equinox.
Talk to me. I know you like Equinox. I like Equinox too.
I love me some Equinox. But I think with Baker, you know, just handling success was something that showed up last year. You know, he had a really, really successful rookie year. You know, he did some things. He showed people some things. And then coming back, and you know, Will and LeVar, you know, and Rick, you know, at anything in life, when you have a little bit of success, sure, you start to feel yourself. It's like, who can stay grounded when you're being successful?
But here's the thing for me. If we're looking at Baker and we're saying, you know what, if he's faster, if he's fitter, he'll be a better quarterback. To me, it starts with what you first said.
Right.
That's not where the issue is. It's, can he read? Can he see things and make a decision quickly? And so I feel like this is, we talked about it with the Deontay Wilder. Mm-hmm. This sounds like an excuse. Like, just call it for what it is, right?
I had a bad time. I wasn't ready.
I wasn't ready, and I wasn't doing the proper work, as opposed to I wasn't fit.
Is he saying he was out of shape? Is that what he was saying, that he's out of shape?
I think that's what's being said.
I think LeVar said it perfect. It's a mental thing for him. That's just all. I think that's what's going on here. Because if that's the true story where he was at the same workout with Deshaun Watson, Deshaun was going in, like, putting in work, and Baker was hanging out watching, you know, wearing street clothes, then maybe he's like, okay, this offseason, I need to put the work in to help himself from a mental standpoint.
Elite competitors do not want to be left behind at the pinnacle of competition, right? You are now in the National Football League. I'll be the first one to tell you, I thought I was going to be a Hall of Famer when I got to the league. And I worked like I was a Hall of Famer, but at certain points, certain things didn't fall into place. If I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm going to put in the work and I'm going to put in the time that I feel is applicable to me and how I can improve my play and how I can improve what my representation is as a leader as a player. So to me, if he's saying I'm going to get myself in shape, maybe he's trying to send out the signal to Odell and to Jarvis and to all these other guys that are on the team and saying, look, I'm coming in ready too. I'm going to be thinking quicker. I'm going to have a sound mind. I'm going to have a sound body. I'm going to be ready for this season.
But at the same time, getting in shape has to be the beginning, not the end.
Right. True. Well, but here's the other part. And Orlando, I thought you brought it up. I think this is a function of success. If this was a guy who had always been top-ranked, always considered
like
the best.
Like if they went to the playoffs last year.
Well, but even beyond that, coming up through high school, through college, if he didn't have to transfer, if he didn't have to be a walk-on, like those guys,
underdog
the
mentality.
Work ethic is built in.
Right. Absolutely.
The last thing I would expect is that Baker Mayfield decides to pull it back and say, oh, I got this.
But it happens. Well, you know, but it does happen.
You get some of those guys that whenever they're on the bottom, they're an underdog. But when they're on top,
They gave him the keys to Cleveland when he got there.
Right.
He turned the culture around. They gave him the keys. LeBron left. He came in, took over, and it was like, Baker, it's all
you.
In
the commercials, right?
That's why they chucked the front office.
Some guys can handle it. Some guys can't.
Can you handle it?
We're about to find out.
LeBar handled it.
Rick Bucher in for Whitlock and Wiley. LeVar Arrington, Orlando Skandrick, and Will Blackman are back. Time now for a big story sponsored by KFC. Feed the whole family with KFC's $20 fill-up with all the fixins. Order online at KFC.com. Let's talk Aaron Rodgers, who announced on Twitter yesterday that he had voted no on the new CBA proposal out of safety concerns, explaining he and his teammates wanted to address the issue of off-season recovery time with the owners planning to extend the regular season and playoffs. Obviously, more games means more money for the players. So, LeVar, what should be their priority in the new CBA? More money or more safety?
It comes across as such a rhetorical question. I mean, the simple and short is more money. I mean, let's be clear here. You can discuss a lot of other things after you get past the resources aspect of it. You can get more resources for health with what? More money. All right? You can get more time off and hang out and recover with what?
More money.
With more money. All right? So for me, it's very simple. You can say no to some of the details and we can negotiate this and negotiate that, but more money has got the coaches, the players, the owners, wives, girlfriends, friends, grandparents, everybody is trying to get what?
More money.
Okay, come on.
simple.
Is this simple?
Rick. More money. It's a dangerous game. I tell you one thing. Players are only getting bigger, faster, stronger. Collisions are only getting bigger, harder. And at the end of the day, are they really offering more money? One more game check for one more game? Let's do, Will, you're a smart dude. We're going to give you one more game check for one more game.
Right.
What do you think the owners are getting out of this whole thing?
Right.
And at the end of the day, I mean, your body is an investment. We all invested in ourselves when we chose to do our jobs, our careers. So why not collect as much return on investment while you can?
No, totally. I agree.
This is three. We're 3-0.
This is 3-for-3.
More money.
You see Mo Money? You like that movie?
Mo Money.
It's definitely more money because the injury rate is what? 100%, right?
Yeah,
that's the only thing for us that's guaranteed is we're going to get hurt. I had 9 surgeries.
Mm-hmm. 7 here.
Thank you.
I'm up.
Right? That's pretty much the big deal. So it's definitely more money because that's not what's guaranteed. You're not guaranteed to make a bunch of money when you play football. You're guaranteed to get hurt. That is for sure. So it has to be more money. The game is not safe.
At all.
Orlando said, people are getting strong. Even at the high school level. I went to a high school game and guys are getting smacked.
Okay, I get all that. But
do you, though?
The number one thing that we hear, because while I haven't played, I've been on the sideline. So I know how physical the game is. But all I hear is that the safety of the game, that taking care of the players from a safety standpoint is one of the primary things that the league has to pay attention to. You guys are telling me in the CBA, forget that. Pay me more, and I'll take care of myself.
The league don't like to pay them injury settlements when you're done. So what do you do? Take out the practices and take out the OTAs, which nobody really cares about, and then we care so much about your safety, but let us just add this one more game to you.
Yeah, and listen, again, the details of it have to be hammered out.
Yeah.
But be clear. We talked about excuses in the last segment, right? The one thing that you have to do as a professional ball player, long before you become a professional, as an athlete, what do you have to do? You have to maintain your body, right? The health of your body and the performance that you're going to give is totally based upon how you take care of your body. So outside of the health concerns of what we're dealing with the brain injuries and different things like that, that's different. All right. Now, that CBA should address those type of deals where you're taking care of through benefits, taking care of your players. But when you're talking about maybe what I feel Aaron Rodgers, we need more rest time. My legs may be fatigued. I may have had like a bump or a bruise, a messed up finger or a toe shin splint or something. You should be taking care. You should be taking that money. You could take part of one game check. And you can maintenance your body every single day for the entire year off of that half of one game check that you're going
to
make.
Maybe half of one of your game checks.
Okay.
Well, I went off-site. Every team I played for, I went off-site to get treatment.
Of course you did.
That's what I'm saying.
If you were smart, you make your body your business.
I understand that. But I'm looking at the money, too. And I'm looking at not just with football, but one of the biggest uncertainties for anybody in any walk of life, and certainly for professional athletes across the board. I've seen enough NBA players hobbling around. They go through the same thing. In playing the game, you ask your body to do more than it was built to do. That's just the reality during your work life, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
The biggest question that we have in this country is health insurance and the cost of it moving forward. That's for everybody. That's not just for NFL players. That's for everybody. So if I wanted to create cost certainty for me moving forward, that would be the element that would be most important to me, is how am I going to be taken care of in the long term? I would dare say that's going to be worth more money than what I'm going to get paid in the short
term. My health insurance is set up for me to be taken care of no matter what my ailment is. So now I look at it from the standpoint of I made sure that the game invested in me based off of what it was paying me. So I'm able to do that.
But were you able to do that because of the money that you made? Because you made a good number as opposed to...
I look at that as a responsible decision on my life to do that. Not how much I made. If I had to take less and be able to spend less and live off of less, I would still put that same amount on being able to take care of myself. But think about this. How long did you play football? When did you start? What age?
Six.
What age?
Eight.
Eight, okay. When did you start getting paid?
I didn't start getting paid until I was 21.
21, so that's what? That's 13 years?
That's a lot of years.
That's 13 years?
My math all messed up on TV.
What? 21. All right, so that's 14 years, right? Okay. 15 years. We played this game. Most people that go into professions, a doctor, right? A lawyer, you can try and do lawyer, you do debates, but you're not operating on open hearts or fixing knees when you're 6 years old and 8 years old. We have played this game, a child's game that pays you a king's ransom since we were kids and did not get paid. So to change our mentality the moment we start making a check, and now it's everybody else's responsibility to take care of us versus it being our responsibility to take care of ourselves. Give me more money. Just like I said in college, give me more money, and that gives me more resources to do what I want to do for myself and take care of myself.
I think that this proposal had a little bit of smoke and mirrors on it, because you're going to take out one preseason game, which is the fourth preseason game, which no one that has made the team has played anyways. And then you're going to add a 17th game and say, oh, we're going to give you one more check. And then you're going to take out an OTA practice or an off-season training camp practice where you make $500 to $1,000?
This is the one question I have for you guys is Aaron Rodgers' suggestion that more time off during the off-season is a compensation for playing an additional game when it comes to your physical health.
I'm sure it is.
Is the grind really like that? Because the I could make the case that the quality of play has deteriorated. I've heard guys say we're not used to hitting. It makes you actually more vulnerable to getting hurt.
But the season isn't longer. The season is not, in theory.
Okay, but I'm
not
saying
longer.
My point is, if you're taking away time during the offseason, is that really a compensation for the additional hits that you're going to take in a 17 game?
No, but it's easily sold. Less time to practice.
It's still taxing.
Less time to be around the facility.
I don't care about sold. I mean, but is it making an impact? I mean,
taxing because, okay, playing corner, I didn't hit much or really at all. But just that daily to day to running around, like my legs were fried.
And that took something out of you.
And because I felt it. When I moved to safety, it was a whole different ballgame. I didn't run much.
But for more money, you're going to push through that fatigue?
For more money.
You're going to push through that fatigue?
I pushed through regardless, but yeah, for more money.
But for more money, you're going to definitely push through that fatigue.
Because teams can cut you and not pay you.
Absolutely.
Because when you're hurt, especially when you're hurt.
There's really almost like, you know, two type of players in the NFL, two type of coaches. There's players that have been fired, and there's players that are going to get fired.
Yeah. All right. You know what you guys needed? You needed load management. Joined now by Yahoo senior NBA insider Chris Haynes and USA Today NBA reporter Mark Medina. Let's talk some hoops. The Lakers say LeBron will sit out tonight's game against the Warriors with a groin injury that is believed to have happened during a fall against the Celtics on Sunday. But LeBron showed no ill effects a couple of days ago, dropping 40 points in a big win over Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. Chris, is this just load management or something to worry about?
I'm going to do my best Marcellus Wiley impersonation, okay. And I'm going to try to pull him off. You know what, guys? You know, this is what the situation is right here. It's all about, you know, when you go that last day of school when you were a senior. You know, it's that Friday. You don't really have to go, but you go because you get perfect attendance. But also, if you go, you're not getting any grades from it. You're already about to graduate. So what's the reason of going? That's why you see people ditch that day of school. Okay. This is LeBron ditching that day of school. Playing the Golden State Warriors, there's not anything to gain from it. The Lakers are pretty much, they feel like they'll be able to take care of business without them, which they should. So why should LeBron go over there and play? So, but that, with that being said,
yes,
this is just a little load management.
Okay.
Just a little bit load management.
Thank you.
I got to it.
Thank you for getting there.
No.
I just didn't know if you were going to be like the league where you're not allowed to say load management.
No, I got to dress it up some other way. No load management, but it's just going to school on the final day.
Yeah.
It's go or not? No, he's not going. That's it.
It's load management. Here's the reality, Rick. If the Warriors had Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on the floor, he would be playing. But since they're not, he's not. They have so much cushion in the standings. And Frank Vogel was talking the other day about wanting to find different ways to give Anthony Davis and LeBron James some time off before the end of the season. But I think in other games, they're going to be playing that 34, 35 minutes because, thankfully for the Lakers, they really haven't had any major injuries so far.
Yeah, all three of us were at the Pelicans game, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
Unbelievable.
And he was on the bench eating red vines, not getting
They say it's Twizzlers, though, right?
Yeah, no, that's another dispute for another day. But here's the issue. LeBron has been adamant in saying, and this is what I struggle with LeBron, mm-hmm. because he has such a high place and he has such power and authority. He has come out and said he's against load management. I'm going to play at every opportunity. And I'm with you, Chris. I believe that's what this is. Like, it's being smart. But you can be smart. Like, I have no problem with you load managing. What I have a problem with you saying is, I'm against load management. I don't believe in it. I play every night, and then you're taking a game off for load management.
Okay.
How do you reconcile that?
Okay, Rick, let me bring this to your attention. You've been covering this league a lot longer than we have, so I will say this. You've always seen when it got to certain points of the season where guys would take nights off, but there wasn't a term for it. He was just taking a night off. Load management has become a term that is just viewed widely as just being negative. Now, this would have happened in a load management era and a non-load management era. So, you know, there's really no point in him playing. And Rick and Mark, we don't know. I know it's LeBron, but we don't know if the Lakers said, "Bron, you sitting your ass down this game." We don't know if they said that and he's just following suit. We all think and assume LeBron could call his own shot, but he could call his own shot.
But Mark,
that's it.
LeBron, we give him credit for thinking the long game, for being intelligent. I mean, he, he's he's been able to have this durability beyond what we've seen any player have. When you come out and you say, I'm against load management, knowing that it's somewhere down the line, for the good of your team and your success, you got to take games off.
I don't think this
is load management. Are you not thinking, you're not thinking ahead?
You can't call this load management, though.
No. So then what are you calling it?
You're taking a day off.
It's a minor injury. Minor injury.
It's been happening for years. We only term it load management because of Kawhi Leonard over the last few years. This is not load management. This is something players have always done.
This is load management.
What did you call it three years ago?
It was load management.
You call it load management four years ago.
No. You didn't call it that, but it's the same thing. We're just calling it by a different name today.
I got to back up Chris here. I think there's some gray area here, but I think the difference with LeBron is that he had an issue with guys sitting out to treat preemptive injuries before it really happened, right? We're here. He's having a little bit of a minor injury and he's nipping in the butt.
So you're believing that there's something to this groin injury.
I'm not going there.
I'm not going there, but it's a very minor thing. And hey, why not minimize
you can't have it both ways.
No.
You got to pick a lane.
He got you there.
Bro. It's either load management or he is doing something because he has an issue. Kawhi Leonard, for example, who's become the poster boy for load management. Uh-huh.
And he did that beginning of the season.
And my mind is that he, for the last couple of years, has been dealing with a legitimate issue. It's why he only played 9 games. He didn't play 9 games that year because of a protest. Mm-hmm. He played 9 games because he didn't think he was capable of playing. He load managed last year because he wasn't sure that he could get to the finish line with the Toronto Raptors by playing every night. What you're telling me is that you believe that LeBron is taking this game off because he has a legitimate issue, not, as Chris has said, that this is just like Russell Westbrook or D'Angelo Russell who have taken pre-planned rest days.
I think I'm basically saying the same thing Chris is saying, but in just in different
Chris,
words.
Chris is not. Chris doesn't see you on the same boat. He's right now, he's going, no.
I think I'm looking at it here. It's the end of the season. They have a cushion, and no one is ever 100% healthy at this point of the year, right? So I think it's more of playing catch up. I think where LeBron has had issues is at the beginning of the year when you're in a lot healthier state to then be taken.
Tell me, look at this. Look at this right now. Does this guy look like a guy who's worried because he's reoccurred his
Some people handle injuries differently. When you're in pain, some people revert to eating candy to treat the pain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They want to make themselves feel good.
It's comfort food, right?
Comfort. Some people do that. I don't know what LeBron, I don't know what his healing mechanism is. That might be it.
Wait a minute, Rick. So now you are both on the same boat.
No, I'm not going, Rick. Rick, but I want to get back to you, Rick. You've been, like I said, you've been covering this league for far too long. What did you call it back when stars set out a few games towards the end of the season?
Well, first of all, we called it preparation for the playoffs is what we called it.
Well, that's what we're calling it now.
Okay, that sounds good. It's not a negative thing.
But I don't know.
Why we can't call this preparation for the playoffs?
Because it's still February and because that was, you said end of the season, right?
Well, it's,
you said end of the season.
But they got a big lead. It's the Warriors. Next week it's March.
It's
the Warriors.
All right, let's move to Houston where the Rockets just handed Ja Morant and the Grizzlies a massive 141-112 loss with the rookie scoring just 12 points. Meanwhile, Zion Williamson just had himself a game against LeBron and the Lakers, dropping 29 in a tightly contested loss earlier this week. Ja appeared to have a lock on Rookie of the Year, but Zion has lived up to the hype since his debut and has clearly been outplaying Ja in the short time he's been on the court. Chris, does Zion deserve a shot at Rookie of the Year despite missing so many games?
Look, he's putting up gaudy numbers. And let me say this. I spoke with the Pelicans, spoke with Alvin Gentry. They believe that if he continues this trend and plays throughout the remaining games of the regular season, that he should have a shot at winning the Rookie of the Year. Now, I agree that he should have a shot at being in contention, but you cannot give Zion Williamson the Rookie of the Year after playing 37 games. That's the most he can play the rest of the season. The guy who won the award with the fewest amount of games before, Patrick Ewing, 1986, it was 50 games. Ja Morant has been there from start to finish, how he's turned this Memphis franchise around. Mm-hmm. You know, really not a true veteran guy in that locker room. He's kind of assumed that role of being a leader, point guard, and doing it on the court. It's hard for me to say somebody who's not even going to play half the season that they should get that award with Ja. I think it sets a bad precedent if that happens.
Philosophically, I wouldn't have a problem with Zion Williamson winning Rookie of the Year award if Ja Morant wasn't in the way, because Zion's been posting up really good numbers. If you look at how many wins the Pelicans have had, I think it's like fifth best in the league since his return. But Ja has been so consistent throughout the season, and at the beginning of the year, everyone was kind of assuming the Grizzlies were going to be a lottery team. No, they're a legitimate playoff team, mostly because of Ja, and he's filling it across the board. He's setting guys up on offense. He's performing highlight reels, and he's a real gym rat and a guy that wants to study film. So he has all really the fundamentals down pat.
So you have less of a problem with the 37 games and more of a problem with the fact that Ja Morant has balled out and deserves it over him.
Exactly.
I am 100% with you as far as Ja Morant is going to get my vote. Now, we all three have votes, right? Ja Morant is getting my vote. But I dare say I could see Zion Williamson winning this, because you guys know the immediacy of what's happening here. Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies are facing the toughest schedule in the NBA. We could see them plummet. We could see a lot more nights like we saw from Ja with 12 points, nine assists, and we could see these huge numbers and the Pelicans vaulting into that eighth playoff spot. So when you look at our fellow voters, first of all, are you guys, are you definitive as I am that Ja Morant is getting your vote? Is there any way that is there any wiggle room there?
Barring an injury,
something that's going to keep him out for the rest of the season. I can't, to me, it sets a bad precedent. Look, I'm in the minority. I felt some type of way when Zion got into the rookie, what they call the game now? The Rising Stars. He played two games.
Right.
He played two games. But I get it.
And he was a star in both games.
And I get it. People want to see him play. No, I get that. That's why I said I had to, put that to the side.
Jackson Hayes didn't.
I got to put that to the side. But this is the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Rookie of the year. Not rookie of 37 games.
Right.
Rookie of the year. So if we were to give him that award, even though he's putting up numbers and getting New Orleans, I think it sets a bad precedent.
But the counter to that is there is no minimum that has been set by the NBA. If you want to have it that way, then there should be a minimum to say you have to play. Patrick Ewing won it. He played 50 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However you want to set it, whatever number you want to set it. But the reality is there is no number there. And if a case can be made that Zion Williamson in 37 games did more than Ja Morant for the Memphis Grizzlies in however many games he ends up playing, are you not doing Zion justice by saying that he deserves Rookie of the Year?
My mind can definitely change towards the end of the season, but as of right now, I just can't see him getting my vote.
Yeah, I can't change it because of Ja Morant, but philosophically, I have no problem with the fact that he missed 44 games, because I can't think of any other contenders in this rookie class
that
would have a chance against Zion.
If Ja Morant wasn't playing up to this level and there's nobody else up there for contention, I get it. Yeah.
You know, the hard part is we just saw Zion light it up, and we saw Ja get run by the Rockets, and you know how that ends up playing.
Well, we're making the right vote, so hopefully
yes,
that
we are.
Prevails.
Hopefully, you've got to be listening to us. All right. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away, Darnell, my man.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Steph Curry.
Okay.
Who has been out since he broke his hand back in October and was reportedly expected back on Sunday against the Wizards. But yesterday, Steve Kerr said Steph might need more time and that there still was no timetable for him to return. At this point, the Warriors have 24 games left, and they have the NBA's worst record. I want to ask you guys, is it worth the risk for Steph to come back at all this year?
For me, yes. It's always been – it's not worth the risk. I've always questioned this. Now, I understand and had a chance to be around Steph and know that in Steph's mindset is he has to come back, because Draymond and Kevon and those guys – have been in the trenches, and they're playing with this team that's not a good team, going nowhere. As the leader of this team, it's important to show that he's not just there for the good times. That, hey, you know what? I know it's not fun, but I'm going to come back, and I'm going to be part of this with you. Now, I get all that. But it smells a lot like the Kevin Durant decision in terms of if you're really leaving it up to the player, of course he wants to play. But is it the smartest thing in the big picture? Okay, so you want to prove that you're that kind of leader? Steph, we already know you're that kind of leader. the risk simply isn't worth the reward. What are you possibly getting out of him coming back and playing this last month?
You know, so long as he's fully healthy, and I've been given every indication that they're not going to rush him back if he's not fully 100%, I think it is worth the risk. Now, people are going to be like, oh, well, what about the lottery odds? Look, the Warriors are so down in the standings that I don't think that's going to make much of a difference, number one. And number two, I say this with full respect to Steph Curry. He's a great player, but there's going to be a process for him to get his timing down and for all the supporting right. guys to adjust to him that they'll probably lose games anyway. So I think there is value in him being able to build off some rhythm, knock some rust down that can carry over into next season and give some data to Warriors GM Bob Myers in the front office of how does everyone look around Steph, the guys like Eric Paschal, Jordan Poole, et cetera.
I think it's worth the risk. This is not a leg injury, a knee injury that he's coming back from. And I think we have to remember this, that just because he returns, we're talking about load management.
Right.
I think they'll be load managing him the rest of the season. He's not going to come back and play every single game. Yeah. And so with that being said, to your point, Mark, then I don't think they're going to make up ground and mess up their lottery odds. And look, Steve Kerr came on my pod a couple weeks ago, and he said he feels like they owe it to the fans of San Francisco.
Okay.
This is what he said.
I know.
To have them, you know.
You're telling me that it's not we owe it because they're paying $1,000 a ticket because we're in the new Chase Center.
They owe it to the fans.
Okay, but I saw Steph at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. They were getting run. I saw them 54-19 in the second quarter against the Phoenix Suns before Steph got hurt.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He can come back and play. It's not going to change the entertainment value of whether the Warriors are competitive.
Timeout. Hold on. I totally disagree. Seen this product on the floor this season for the Warriors?
Okay, maybe I have to amend that a little bit. It's not. No. Let me put it this way. Yeah, it's not going to raise the entertainment value enough for the risk value that's involved. And I hear you in terms of getting his rhythm back and sort of getting a feel for next season. And that would make sense to me if we didn't have the Olympics this summer. And if he wasn't going to get an opportunity to go to their training camp and be able to get his game going, because let's be honest. I mean, all right, so he gets to play with Eric Paschal a little bit. But how many guys on this roster right now that he's going to be on the floor with are going to get any meaningful time next year if this team really is where they want it to be? That's where this, so this whole idea, like, we're building toward next year. You got training camp. You got a hope. You got a brand new team next year, hopefully. Otherwise, this isn't going to be that much different.
Yeah, I think there's points to be made on both ends, and I totally understand it. But I think that the Warriors are evaluating Steph Curry similarly with how they were evaluating Klay Thompson, where they decided Klay Thompson is not going to be back this season because he's not recovered enough, and it would lead to further damage. So I think that that's the same kind of model they're viewing Steph, where with his specific injury, he's made more progress, therefore or more optimistic that he'll be able to at least play a few games.
Rick, I want to jump in real quick. At the end of the day, Steph Curry brought this up earlier, either this year.
Yeah.
You can't go in with the mindset that, hey, I might get hurt. We understand anytime you step on that court, you might get hurt.
Yeah.
But if he's 100% healthy, go out there and play.
Okay, but
Why not?
And to give you a little pushback on you that it's not a leg injury, he had two surgeries on this hand. He's told us there was nerve damage in there. Like, that he's going to be 100%, and keep in mind, you're also playing at a time where everybody's in condition, everybody's playing at a different speed. It's not his shooting hand, it's his offhand. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons that I could give you that, okay, let's go and try it and play it. But again, if I look at risk versus reward, I'm like, nah, let me be 110%. Rick Bucher in for Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington, Orlando Skandrick, and Will Blackman are back. Let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott still doesn't have a new deal, though reportedly the two sides are finally talking again after months of inactivity. New Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy just weighed in on Dak, saying he is definitely a franchise quarterback, but declined to comment about his contract situation. LeVar, do you think McCarthy actually wants Dak as his franchise quarterback?
I believe that was part of him being enticed to come to Dallas. Yes, I do. I do believe so. But I think the caveat here is he's not going to say he's not a franchise quarterback. Being asked, is he a franchise quarterback? You know, I'm saying that defenses can get you to championships. quarterbacks win you championships. I don't think that Mike McCarthy necessarily wants to start over with what he has already in place. He has a very fine roster and personnel group in place, and I think that's very, very attractive to him. I think he wants him, but again, I think it now comes back to the discussion of how much is it going to cost?
Yes, I think McCarthy is a veteran, well-seasoned coach who's been privileged to have two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in his career. But also in that time of his two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, he has had to go through Matt Flynn, Scott Tolzien, Brett Hundley. So he knows how hard it is to find that position. So when it comes to an aspect of him saying, is Dak the franchise quarterback and does he want him? My answer is simple, bottom line, yes.
So you're saying that he's saying he is, not that I have to say this because of the circumstance.
I think he really believes
I don't think that he's a franchise quarterback.
Otherwise, he could have said he can be. Then we could have raised a lot of questions. McCarthy had the privilege, you know, of actually watching film for an entire season, for an entire calendar year of all these quarterbacks. And I'm sure he evaluated every situation. He saw a couple guys in the hot seat, knew Garrett was one of the guys, and evaluated everything about that. And this is another situation, like Orlando said, where it's a turnkey franchise, mm-hmm. right? I got drafted the same year McCarthy came to Green Bay in 2006. We had Favre, we had Rodgers as a backup, we had Hall of Fame corner Charles Woodson, we had everybody everywhere. Just go in there and manage it and do a good job. And I feel like with this, going to Dallas, he evaluated everything and he is sure that Dak is his guy.
I cannot believe that he thinks that Dak Prescott is Aaron Rodgers.
No, not at all. We never said that.
Don't do that, Rick.
We feel like that he...
don't do that, Rick.
He said that.
Oh, I don't know. I think he's just
being
overzealous.
I see all of... In Dak, I see everything in Aaron Rodgers to take me to a Super Bowl. He didn't have to say that. So I think he's playing the political game.
I don't think so.
There's a very good chance that he's going to have Dak Prescott as his quarterback. So why would I say anything other than what Dak Prescott wants to hear at this stage? It's still up to the management to figure out whether he is or he isn't. And if he isn't, I haven't lost anything by saying that. But I do believe it's a dangerous precedent to suggest. I just can't put Dak Prescott in Aaron Rodgers' camp. And that's what Mike McCarthy did.
I like what you did right there, Rick. And I'm going to tell you why I like it. Because that could be, this could be the very reason why Dak is more open-minded to possibly trying to find a common ground on what that number is that can get this deal done. But I also agree with you in the sense that, well, think about this. We just talked about Tua mm-hmm. on the show mm-hmm. and how he has an affinity for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, Dallas is picking at 17th in the draft. This is a very deep class of quarterbacks. There's a strong possibility somebody says, oh, there's an injury that, you know, this injury shows something that we didn't originally thought that was there or think that was there. There, you know, Dallas could possibly move in a position to try to get Tua. So this could be a tongue-in-cheek, even though he may be being truthful about it. You can still look at what McCarthy is saying as, okay, this guy can win me a championship. He reminds me of Aaron Rodgers. Well, if we can't get him signed, maybe your team wants a guy that reminds
you're
me.
He's selling him to somebody else?
Maybe your team wants a guy that reminds me of Aaron Rodgers.
LeVar,
it's possible.
LeVar, I'm going to have to, you know I love you, but I'm going to have to respectfully disagree. If you're telling me that you're willing to let a guy who has started 64 games in his first 4 years, which is every game his first 4 years,
right.
made it to two Pro Bowls, won you two division titles, you're willing to possibly be open to swapping him out for a guy who has done nothing but got hurt.
Will he have a choice?
Stephen Jones came out and said it in his presser 2 days ago. If they ask him, is there any chance anyone else is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys and not Dak Prescott? And he said, absolutely not.
I think people can retract statements. It happens all the time.
But you really get paid for durability. And if you know your guy is going to be there, that's a franchise quarterback.
But how far can Dak take him? That's still probably the number one question on the brass's mind.
No, of course. McCarthy
can come in and think what he wants to think, right? It's a safe choice. Everything that you guys have given makes it a safe decision.
The only valid thing, really quick, what you said is that
it happened, only one valid thing?
Well, in terms of the injury thing, yes. Okay, fair enough. What's what happened with DK Metcalf? Everyone was scared of his neck injury, therefore he found the draft, slipped. Landed to Seattle.
It's possible he could slip.
Elsewhere
in the NFC East, the Redskins are raising even more questions about their quarterback situation. Washington has the number 2 pick, and new head coach Ron Rivera says the team will meet with Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa despite drafting Dwayne Haskins just last year. Don't smile. Haskins' rookie year was pretty rough, going 2-5 with 7 touchdowns and 7 picks, a completion percentage under 60, and just 151 passing yards per game. LeVar, what are the chances that Haskins is the Redskins' starting QB next season?
I say 100%. And that being leaving a little bit of room for there being no more percentages to add to that percentage unless you're getting extra credit. Let's take a good look at it, right? He's your number 1 draft pick from a year ago, all right? He comes in, he has to play a little bit prematurely based upon the turmoil of coaching, different things taking place, the coach gets fired. Haskins was put in a situation where it opened him up for easy criticism. And I played in the nation's capital. That is what the nation's capital is. You played there. The nation's capital is built. It is built on.
I don't even know where y'all talking about.
It is built on quarterback controversies. So I don't look at that and then listen to the noise of it. What's taking place is what you're supposed to do. You have an opportunity to bring in top prospects at the position. You can gain knowledge, you can gain book, and you can file it away. I don't necessarily have to be drafting you. I'm looking at, well, maybe 3-4 years down the line. But we may want them. That's how I'm looking at it.
Right.
I think it's a great chance he's a starting quarterback. I don't think Burrow makes it to him. We can.
Okay.
But not 86. But
wait, 100. One second. Okay. We're going to 86 that off the list. There's so much uncertainty with Tua Tagovailoa. And just
Tagovailoa.
Tua Tagovailoa. But they've just put a top 15 pick into Dwayne Haskins. So let's say they do say, okay, we're going to take Tua Tagovailoa. Or they do say we're going to trade up and get Burrows. What do you do with this top 15 pick? You're never going to get that value back.
Okay, but we just had in Arizona. They took Josh Rosen.
They also drafted.
First round pick.
Yeah, but they also
got a new coach in. And they took another quarterback.
Okay, Rick.
Like, I don't see that as
Rick,
a precedent for not doing.
Where did the new coach come from?
Well,
where he was at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where did the? I get that, but
so,
still.
I don't think that this is. I think it's a good chance that Haskins is a quarterback, but this is a classic case of you've been with new coaches, right. New regime. Ron Rivera coming in and saying everything's on the table. Everyone's job's up for grabs. No one has a position on his team. He's coming in and basically saying it's a new sheriff in charge. I'm in charge.
Right.
I'm the king. I'm the emperor. I'm everything.
I'm gonna say 96%.
Okay. That he's in.
He's starting for that reason. What happened in Arizona, especially now with the Redskins being there, it's a completely revamp. Everything is under evaluation. Everything is brand new. Your pick last year doesn't matter who we're gonna pick this year. We got new people in different parts. They got Bruce Allen out. It's completely different. So I don't know what Ron Rivera is thinking. I don't know what everyone is thinking in that organization. I believe that he should be and that he can be, but Ron Rivera said, this is more than me doing my due diligence. This is a real meeting, which to me is the same difference.
Haskins is a player.
You can
call him immature. Okay. You can
That's
say
fine.
This, that. Haskins is a player, and Chase Young is going number 2, both from the DMV, and it starts the resurrection and the rebirth of what this team could possibly
but they didn't
be.
Go to Penn
Lock
State.
It.
They didn't go to Penn State.
All right. I'm going to.
And I hate the school that Chase went to.
Lock it.
But you're the one.
Lock
Lamar,
it in.
You're the one who said, this draft is chock full of quarterbacks.
Correct.
Now, taking Chase Young after you used 2 second-round picks last year to move up to get Montez Sweat, you're putting a lot in one area for a team that needs a lot of help. I could just
that's
as well.
That's what you should do.
They need pass rushers.
But I could just as well see them trading down, getting multiple picks since they don't have a second-round pick this year, and trying to bolster things and still get another quarterback. This is the problem that I have with this idea that Ron Rivera is saying, hey, we're just doing our due diligence and otherwise.
He's saying we're doing more than our due diligence. He said this is a real meeting.
Fair enough.
Right.
So this idea that he's all in on Dwayne Haskins, the question I have is what he also said about Dwayne was, you know what, so what do you think of Dwayne? Well, you know what, he's been showing up. He's in the building. That's not a ringing endorsement.
Well, he doesn't know him.
Has started yet, Rick.
He doesn't know him.
Nothing has started.
I get that, but you're telling me he hasn't looked at tape? You're telling me he hasn't looked at him and said, hey, you know what?
I think this guy doesn't know him. I watched tape. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to do very well in the NFL, but I don't know him.
If you look at Ron Rivera, he's a defensive-minded guy. Correct. Think about what took place and the success that the Giants had during their run. They had a guy by the name of Mike Strahan. They had a guy on the other side by the name of O.C. Umanyiora. They had another guy by the name of Justin Tuck. Then they had another guy by the name of Mathias Kiwanuka that I know you know very well. They brought in pass rusher upon pass rusher to have waves
Barry
of
Colfield,
guys that
Rocky
could
Bernard.
Get that could get right. to the quarterback. That's exactly what the type of personnel they have in Washington, D.C. They're loading up. You add Chase Young to that defense that they have, which is already pretty good. Right. It becomes almost an elite status defense. You don't pass on Chase Young.
Absolutely not.
Chris Haynes and Mark Medina are back. Let's move to Philadelphia, sponsored by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. The Sixers have already been without Ben Simmons the last couple of games because of a back injury, and now it looks like they could be without Joel Embiid, who suffered a shoulder injury in last night's loss to the Cavs. The Simmons-Embiid combo hasn't lived up to expectations this year. Chris, is building around these two guys the smartest way to win?
Well, look, right now it's the only way to win right now. They're stuck with these guys right now. Look, they have to do something in this postseason to justify keeping this group together, to justify even looking at Brett Brown.
And what is that? What is that in your mind? How far do they have to go to say we're going to stay with what we've got?
They got to get to the finals. Conference finals,
wow.
I guess. Conference finals.
Okay.
They have to get to the conference finals. Anything else is just not going to be satisfactory. And that might not even be enough. You know, so look, you've got to look at the landscape of how the dynamic of the way Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons play. It's not the ideal pairing. We know that. But they both draft these guys. And so they have to figure out a way to make it work. It would help if they get other pieces to help complement those guys. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. Al Horford, they didn't fit. Let J.J. Redick go. Let a lot of shooting go. I never thought this team was better than last year. A lot of people were thinking so. And this is turning out to be, you know, what they really are. And Brett Brown has to take some heat. I don't think he's getting a lot of heat. Brett Brown's face should be on his poster as well.
Okay. Well, Chris, I got to break it to you. They're not going to the finals here. I think the Bucks.
Or the conference finals.
Yeah, maybe. But the Bucks are so above and beyond the Sixers right now. And when you're casting the blame with everything with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, I am skeptical of their fit, but not because of the health. It's because of their style of play where Ben hasn't been a willing or capable shooter. I like Joel's game, but he's not going to be that stretch five. But I think it's more on the front office to build the pieces around to accentuate their positive attributes and hide them from their weaknesses. So the fact that when J.J. Redick left last summer, they didn't get enough shooters, that was a problem. So I would put more blame more on the front office than the coaching staff, because right now the coaching staff is working with what they
have. Hold on. You can't just give Brett Brown a pass.
I'm not giving him a pass. I'm saying I'm put more blame on the front office for the roster construction.
I get that, but there have been times throughout his period where he's lost that locker room, and it's been because of the talent that they have on that roster that they've been able to coop some wins together.
Yeah. When it comes to Brett Brown, for me, it's – he went through the rebuilding. I'm surprised he still has the job now. It's remarkable. That said, I believe that this is the smartest way to win games as of right now. It's a matter of what your goal is. If it's to win a championship, it's not the smartest way to win a championship, but it's the smartest way to have a perennial playoff team. These are two talented players. And I always have this problem when we say, oh, let's get rid of this guy. Okay, so you're going to get rid of one of them. What are you going to get in exchange that is going to make you appreciably better? That's the difficulty. The other part, and this goes to the front office, and this is where, honestly, I'm kind of in agreement with you.
You've been wrong all day, Rick, on these NBA.
But we're right on this, though.
Both y'all agree with each other. You've been wrong all day. But go ahead,
I feel like I've been over here. You two have been over there.
Finish what you got to say.
Still trying to figure out exactly where you are. That said, I'm not going to put coaching at the head of the list. Because not only did you not, like J.J. Redick leaving, a lot of that had to do with his relationship with Trajan Langdon. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he ever thought he was actually going to leave. There's some future considerations that are involved in there.
Get you.
But the fact of the matter is that he left, And then they not only didn't replace him, but they spent big money on Al Horford, 30-something, and Tobias Harris, who is good, but is he a max player? And so the question is, where do you go from here? Like, how realistic is that you could break those two up and that you're going to get appreciably better?
And let's not forget about they let Jimmy Butler go as well. They weren't willing to pay him the money that he wanted. And then there were some things with Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons as well that went on that never really got out. But look, no, definitely, you got to look at the front office and coaching staff. I put the front office, that's fine putting them up there. But look, when you're talking about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, like it or not, I know they're not the perfect player, but these are borderline cornerstone type players.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, and I think to Chris's point, there is a way to make it work. You look at last year, right? They were basically a Kawhi Leonard game-winning shot away from being able to get to the next round, right? Okay. And so I think it's really more on what happened after that with the free agency departures and how they filled the rest of the roster. And so I'm not going to say, Chris, that Brett Brown's blameless, but as far as ranking everything in order, I think it is front office and then coaching staff and then the players.
I don't have a problem with that.
So if you are going to move one of them, who are you
going
who are you moving? And keep in mind, we've got new information now because we got Ben Simmons with a back injury.
Yes.
There was, you know, and me talking to GMs, they were always like, well, Ben Simmons is the healthier option. They still believe his track record is better than Joel Embiid's, but I'll tell you what, man, a back issue and not knowing whether they're going to have surgery or not and what exactly it is, that changes the equation. Actually, it doesn't change the equation for me. I was always a Joel Embiid guy.
Yes.
Now, Chris?
The back injury does scare me. It does scare me. But I'm going to answer this question as if this back injury isn't serious because we just don't know yet.
Okay.
So with that being said, I have to go with the guy that I believe is going to give me a decade of quality all-star seasons. I'm more convinced that that's Ben Simmons opposed to being Joel Embiid.
How do you justify his not having a jump shot after all these years?
Look,
you got Markelle Fultz, you got Lonzo Ball, you've like Giannis Antetokounmpo, like you have all these guys who've developed a jump shot.
What frustrates me a lot is that, and I hate the summertime, because you're seeing all these highlights of them playing
open
gym.
Oh, the IG stories.
I've seen Ben Simmons hit 100 three-pointers over the summer. You know what I mean? And just taking it with no ease and then not doing it. Like, so I share your frustration along with everybody else.
Yeah.
But with that being said, there's so much that he does. On the defensive end, he's one of the top perimeter defenders out there in the league. So he's a multi-dimensional type player. That's why I have to go with him. But that back injury does scare me.
We have to go, but I'm going to give you Simmons or Embiid. All right.
I would take Simmons, but here's the problem is that I don't know how much value both of those guys are going to draw because of their limitations. I mean, with Simmons specifically, on one hand, he represents everything you want in today's NBA. He's positionless, can play make, great defender, but you got to be able to shoot in today's league.
LeVar Arrington is back. Uncle Jimmy is off. He'll be back next week. Let's return to Baker Mayfield, who had a rough sophomore season but is reportedly planning to slim down in an effort to get faster, with the Browns organization making Baker's fitness and conditioning a major priority this offseason. LeVar, what's your approval rating for Baker Mayfield?
Well, since my man Uncle Jimmy is off, I'm going to go ahead and try to mimic his voice and make it real fun right here while we do our approval ratings. All right. His job performance, I'm going to give him a 15 because he was a killer in college and still has a little bit of potential to be a killer in the league. And I'm going to give him the same for all-time greatness for the same exact reason, because he was a killer in college, but he could still be a killer in the league. But he ain't killed nothing but maybe a little bit of his rep in the league so far. Now I'm going to move on down to character. I'm going to give him a 9. I'm going to give him a 9, Rick. Because only a character would show up and have 3 different sets of facial hair looks for one singular game. So I'm going to give him a 9. He scored low on that one. Nah. And authenticity, I'm going to give him a 20 because the same thing. 3 facial hair deals. I'm going to give him a total of a 59, making him a role player, Rick.
Your Jimmy got better as you went along.
Well,
I'll give you that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Job performance, I'm going to give him a 12 simply because we saw what he was last year. When you go to greatness, hey, look, he was a Heisman Trophy winner, so if I, in totality, I got to give him a decent number there. When it comes to, look, character, a 7. Come on. Ooh. He's a frat boy is basically what he is. But authenticity, he is who he is. So ultimately, that is a role player. That's it for us.